This is the Home Improvement Show on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
I was late. Sorry, I was on the phone, Walter. My apologies. I'm such a rude host.
You are?
Lindsay was calling about the problem on the 40 East inbound and the mess it is. And they're forcing you onto the service road, of course,
yeah,
to get through that mess.
Yeah, I mean, I went through that this morning. I almost didn't make it. I almost didn't make it, and would have been a tragedy for the show.
You would have been on the phone.
You would have had to answer all the questions on your own.
I have you on speed dial, my friend. I would have directed. We would have conferenced you in.
You know, Ken, I have to say, I met yesterday a really interesting, sweet lady that is a homeowner that impressed me, and impressed me because how much pride she took in her home. She designed her own house and built it in 1965.
What part of town?
Beaconsfield. And even the layout, she's the original owner, so even the layout is so avant-gardist. It was an open concept. It's like Art Deco style, but it still fits in today's, it's timeless, right?
She had a vision.
Not only that, what's impressive is how she maintained it and kept it up during the years. And everything that she's done to keep it up to date preemptively. That was very impressive.
Smart,
you know, takes the bull by the horns. Because usually we rarely get called for, you know, things that are going to happen. When we get the call, it's because things already happened, you know.
It's already left the barn, as they say.
Yeah, so it's like someone owning a car waiting for their engine to blow before they change the oil. That's what happens, unfortunately, in most homes. But in this particular case, it was the opposite. It was someone that is calling to do more preemptive things because they want to, you know, make sure that their house is always in tip-top shape and the house doesn't kick back. And, you know, I always like to do, although they're rare, but when I go to one like these, I'm actually happy.
Very nice.
So that appointment made me happy.
Yeah, right. Sometimes the little things like that can make your week. Is the house up for sale? I'm prepared to make an offer. out there on the West Island. Very nice. All right. You want to talk to Walter? By all means, he's here for the full hour and it's free. You can pick his brain, ask him whatever you want. Free advice, sometimes a little guidance is all you need. 514-790-0800. Don't wait until the second half hour when it gets really busy. Call now and grab a line. Walter, we're going to bring in Ron out in Pierrefonds. Good morning, Ron.
Yeah, hi, Ken. Walter. Yeah, I don't know if you remember me. I had the Lennox heat pump, which Walter helped me out.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question. I'm using the...
Sorry?
I'm using these filters for the, for the getting the dust.
Yeah.
I forget what they call them.
Okay, yeah, the filters. Yeah.
Electrostatic filters, yes.
Okay, yeah. I have the old heat pump I had was a York.
Okay.
I had an electronic air filter. Can I use that still?
Electronic air filter on a different heat pump. I don't even think it will fit.
The thing is still there from the old previous one. They never took it off. It's from New York, and they just put the heat pump in.
Hmm.
So, I mean, that's still there, and I have, like, the two...
So where do you put your filter now for the new heat pump?
It's the same place.
But you're putting a paper filter, right?
Yeah.
And you see,
stay there.
The thing what I like, personally, I prefer paper filters. I prefer the good quality, the HEPA ones. They do a better job usually, and they tend to catch more particulate, and that's what you really want to be kind of trapped into the filter. So if you would get the right thickness and the right size HEPA filters, you're better off, and your machine is better off. The only downside to that is you have to remember to change it at least once every 3 months. There's a misconception that people, you know, they tell you once every 6 months. That's not true. 3 months would be the minimum benchmark to change it. So that's just, it becomes a question of a maintenance issue, an alarm on your phone or something that to remind me every 3 months to do it. Electrostatic filter is a bit less demanding that way, but they're less effective as well.
So the filtrate, they have different widths on them, I guess, right?
They have different widths. They have different widths and different thicknesses too, right?
Okay.
So depending how much you want it to be efficient and productive, depending on, like, for example, if you're in an area where you have a lot of dust, construction around you, road work and what have you, then you would definitely, or you're doing renovations, you definitely need to change the filters more often. But the best thing is to have the exact right size for it. And sometimes you'd have to do them custom. They don't necessarily always exist, especially in thicknesses. And, you know, and if you're going to go that route, which is very recommended, order a whole box of them. You're good for many years to come. Don't just order, you know, three and keep on ordering as you go.
There you go, Ron.
Okay, do you need two at a time, like the in and out, or just one?
One.
Okay.
One will do.
Thanks for the, one thanks for the call.
Ron, have a great day.
You too.
Bye now. I change mine every 3 months, and at the three-month mark, it's ready to be changed.
It is.
Yeah.
It is, and sometimes more than others. Like if you are, for example, in the winter month, I would change it a lot more often because everything is closed out. So you absolutely need that clean air. So definitely, and if you do renovations, if you have any type of construction work outside, landscaping, anything that could create more dust.
Makes an impact.
100%.
514-790-0800 to talk to Walter Assey from Renovco. Call us now. Leftover from last week here on the text line, I'm going to throw this at you. We have 3 minutes before traffic. It says, good morning, Ken and Walter. I have a 1,600 square foot roof. Thinking of getting it redone. When I get a quote, should the roofer be getting up on the roof? I've had two quotes so far. One gentleman got on the roof. The other just looked from the street. That's from Peggy.
It's a very good question. And it's, you know what? It depends on how visible your roof is from the street. Some roofs are very visible, and in any which case, you are changing the whole roof. So to inspect certain areas in the roof over others that are not visible is not as important. It's not just, you know, it's what the... What I'm more interested in, if your roof is visible from the street, is he going into your attic?
Right, yeah.
You know, if none of them went into the attic, I would worry about both, to be honest. Because you can have a lot more problems. I mean, the roof from the top, you're changing it. Anyways, you have brand new shingles. You're probably going to have a new ice shield membrane, new synthetic paper, new vents, new plumbing, new ventilation, new plumbing vents, you know, drip edge and what have you. And that's one thing that roofers do not always include in their quotation as drip edges. So, you know, if they don't go further and investigate further the other elements that are going to affect the lifespan of the roof, I would worry a lot more than if someone went up to the roof to check the top of the roof.
To just random thoughts that occurred. One way to get a good look at your roof, if you get along with your neighbor across the street, go upstairs in their house and you can see your roof really well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I don't know if this is a silly question or not, but are some roofers using drones now?
I've seen it.
A good look.
Yeah, I've seen it, and usually higher roofs, and you know, a bit more complicated to get to roofs. And you know, sometimes it's actually like the good ones give you extremely high resolution, so you see everything really in details. And the other thing is, like you said, I mean, from your neighbor, from across the street, and what have you. The drones is one way as well, but again, there is a lot more to a roof than just the shingles. Right. And if the shingles are wrinkled and they are withered and they are, you know, curling up, ask a lot more questions. See why is that happening? Ask the roofer how much ice shield membrane is he putting. Ask him about the slope of your roof, the angle of your roof. Talk about the ice damming you have on the roof. You have to also volunteer a lot of the information, and don't be too much self-reliant on them, because when the problem does happen, you're going to have every excuse in the book why this roof leaked, except for the shingles or the roof or the things that were actually touched by that roof.
There you go, Peggy. Hope that was some help. The text line is 514-800. Our phone number here to get on the air and talk to Walter is 514-790-0800. Steve out in Sorrel, we're coming to you right after this.
You're listening to the Home Improvement Show on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are. 921. You want some free advice? We've got the guy here, Walter Assey from Renovco. Steve is out in Sorrel and has been waiting to talk to you. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
We're good. You have an insulation issue.
Yes, I do, and I'm not quite sure how to proceed.
Okay.
First of all, I bought this house just last year. It's a semi-detached, and we had an inspector come. And I don't think he did a very good job because it seems to be lots of issues. Cost me a lot of money during the winter to heat, baseboard heating, and it cost me like about $2,000 for the winter months, which is like very astronomical. So we had a contact at Hydro and that, and we had specialists come in, you know, to inspect the house and things like that. And they said we need to improve the insulation and get a heat pump and et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
The house was built, I think, in the early 50s. And we have, where the kitchen is, there's a crawl space below it. Mm-hmm. And it's not insulated. It's a cinder block. They said I need to put insulation there. But my biggest concern is the roof, because I have no vents on the roof whatsoever. I have no access to the attic to see what the insulation is like. It's completely closed off. I have a fair-sized living room that runs pretty well the width of the house, and it has a fireplace. It's a cathedral ceiling, and our bedroom on the second floor has a cathedral ceiling. And then the people who own this place, they made the attic another room, and it's also like a cathedral ceiling. Mm-hmm. Well, I have no idea what kind of insulation I have there, and I'm not quite sure how to proceed.
All right. Well, you got the guy. All right. What do you think, Walter?
I know I've got the guy. I listen to you gentlemen every week.
Steve, there's a few steps we could take, but beforehand, I just want to clarify one thing, because what I understood from you is that they asked you to insulate like a crawl space with a cinder block. Okay. That have nothing to do with the roof, right? So this is just two separate issues.
No, it does not. But our above the crawl space is our kitchen.
Okay.
And our kitchen is always cold.
All right.
Okay.
So let's talk about the crawl space first, because that's the first thing you mentioned, and just to kind of separate both issues, not to confuse the listeners.
Yeah.
As far as the crawl space is concerned, there's many things we could do. First and foremost, what kind of a floor you have in that crawl space?
To be honest with you, I have not a clue.
Okay.
It's covered with some kind of linoleum.
Okay. But is there a cement slab underneath?
To be honest with you, I could not tell you.
Okay. The reason I'm asking this is because sometimes crawl spaces do not have cement slabs. They're like literally just on soil and rock, and you have so much humidity coming out from that it, you know, it ruins the whole air quality of the house.
Well, I have a feeling, it's not a cement slab.
Okay. Well, I mean, usually there's a lot of telltale signs. One of them is a musty, strong smell, humidity smell, offensive smell in a lot of cases, high humidity and what have you. Now, if that's the case...
I do not have a musty smell down there.
Okay, so you might not have an earth, you might have a cement slab after all, especially if you have a linoleum floor on top.
Okay.
But what you could also, what you could potentially have is, let's say you do have soil, it could have been adequately vapor barriered. So, because there is a fix that you could do that will eliminate 90% of that problem, which is just simply overlapping vapor barriers on top of the soil. And that will decrease the humidity drastically for you. Okay? And it's cheap, and you could do it yourself and what have you. Now, as far as insulation is concerned, well, you know, you have a choice. If you want to insulate the walls and the rim joists, you could. If you want to insulate the ceiling in the crawl space, that's also another way. Urethane is a great tool for that. Or you could even simply, if you have enough thickness, you could put the fiberglass and the vapor barrier underneath. Okay. Now, if you want to do, this is where a word of caution is, and that's where it gets to be a bit more complicated. Insulation technically should not remain exposed, especially urethane is flammable. So we have to have some coat of a fire protection on top. Okay. Now, if you don't want to go through the hassle of drywall and, you know, fire tape and plaster and so on and so forth, because just the drywall without one tape at least of plaster is not enough, then you could do what you call an ignifuge type insulation, which is the urethane they shoot first, and then they shoot a thin coat of mortar right on top. Okay. And that acts like the fire retardant for you. Okay. I know that in a lot of cases, people just opt for the urethane, but as soon as you have an insurance inspection or any type of issue, then that's going to come out that you have to cover it up and you have to have a fire protection, also for your safety as well.
Okay. Now, as far as the roof is concerned, because he does rise, I must be losing some heat, because even our living room on the main floor is always cold. It's always cold in this house. Okay. I'm always freezing.
Well, I mean, if you have an uninsulated crawl space, that will always be the case. So that should help once that room is insulated from the bottom, because the rim joist, by the way, is one of the areas that lose the most energy out of a home. So, you know, at a minimum, you should insulate your rim joist. That's a given, right?
So I should really look at the floor in the crawl space, because that's where I'd be losing or getting a lot of cold that's coming up.
Yeah, that's potentially one place. Now, as far as your attic is concerned, okay, there are telltale signs, and there are ways that are less intrusive. Now, you have those instruments that you could use that will tell you in a cold day what is the temperature on your exterior wall. Okay, and then you could do a thermal imaging as well, where by which it tells you A, the temperature, and B, where you have all the loss of energy and lack of insulation areas and so on and so forth. That you can determine that within a few minutes instead of opening up the whole ceiling and what have you.
Right.
The other way, and if you don't want to go that way, you go the old-fashioned way, and you see how is your roof behaving in the winter. Do you have a lot of ice damming? Do you have...
No, but I do get icicles, but not a big... No big ice jam, but I do get icicles.
Okay, how old is your roof?
About 14, 15 years.
Okay, and do you have any curling in the shingles? Do you see
shingles look great.
So the great news for you, Steve, is you don't have any of the symptoms that could potentially mean you have a problematic attic, right? So again, it's, yes, I understand you don't have access, and that's technically not a good thing when you know.
Exactly, because I'm used to because I've owned a few houses over the years, and I'm used to having access by a hatch or something to look up in the attic.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, if you don't have the signs, that's good news for you. If you ever need to know for certainty, you could always do a thermal imaging, or there are those just simple machines that just detect the temperature in your exterior wall. So and what you want to look at is that in different areas what kind of readings you get. So if you have a big variation,
Who would I see to get thermal imaging?
Now, mostly water damage restoration contractors should have instruments like that. Not every contractor, because it's one thing to own a thermal imaging. It's another thing to have the courses to know how to use a thermal imaging camera and have the accreditations, right? So usually these types of guys would have it.
All right, gentlemen, we're going to have to leave it there. We're up against the clock. Steve, great call. I hope that was some help for you.
It was excellent help. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Have a good day.
All right, coming right back with more on the Home Improvement Show after the news.
You might just need to tighten the thingamajig on the whatchamacallit. This is the Home Improvement Show on CJAD 800.
Is that my cue? I got to get more sleep. Sorry about that. Sometimes you got to hit me over the head with one. You should have one of those foam rubber bats for me, Walter.
I do.
It's in the car. Let me know when you...
They don't allow me to bring it in. Apparently, there's a 2x4 in it. That's why.
That's Walter Assey from Renovco. 937. Glenn's been waiting to talk to you, Walter. He's out in Chateauguay. Glenn, good morning.
Hi. Good morning.
Go ahead.
I've been in a condo for 2 years. It's 10 years old. I looked at I opened up the air exchanger and the fans got a big film of dust on it. Mm-hmm. And so I want to have them cleaned. I want to do the dryer ducts, the vent over the stove, vent in the bathroom. How often do you recommend doing these kind of services? And do you have anyone you recommend that would do it?
Okay, so you have a whole bunch of mechanicals. You're really going with... And you know what? In a way, Glenn, it's not a bad idea that you do all your filter changes in the same time, because it kind of gives you this date of let's do it all and you know, not forget anything and so on and so forth. Very few people remember to change the filter in their vents, in their kitchen exhaust, and very few people forget to clean the lint in their dryer. So that's, you know, it's actually good that you're mentioning that. As far as the dryer, I mean, usually the rule is twice a year, but minimum once a year, if anything. That is in cases where you have a well functional, you know, short span type of a duct. In the case where you would have a long span, and you know, ups and downs and angles and what have you, you might need to do it more often. The dryer will talk to you. Okay, so, I mean, in a lot of cases, if you find that the clothes are smelly or they're damp, you know, then that's telling you something, okay? So that's one thing. Now, as far as duct cleaning for washing machines, for dryers, I should say, it's usually the ventilation companies that would give that service. They don't necessarily heavily advertise it, but they do have it in a lot of cases. So cleaners like La Cité, for example, would have, you know, the ventilation specialist clean your dryer vent. I remember there was a company called Lint Free in the past, but they're not doing it anymore, and they were great. So, yeah, I mean, usually ventilation cleaning companies are your best bet. And if you combine it with something else, it's worth their while. Because just to come and clean your vent, dryer vent, it might not be an interesting visit for them. But if you give them like multiple things to do, like, you know, cleaning your air duct systems and so on and so forth, then it's definitely worth their while. And you would have a better chance to get a faster service this way.
Okay. How often do you recommend having the air exchanger ventilation system cleaned?
The air exchanger, again, the way I do it is twice a year. I know the minimum is to do it once a year, but I do it every time we have a drastic change in the season. So like winter, summer type of a thing. So right before the winter gets changed, right when the summer happens, gets changed. So twice a year would be a good starting point.
But I mean, you're saying twice a year to clean the filter, or are you saying to clean the whole ventilation system?
No, just a second. The ventilation system itself, to be quite frank with you, it's usually they tell you once every 2-3 years, but I don't see any necessity for that because your filters in the system tend to capture 99% of the particulate. Okay, unless in cases where you would have major renos, that's, or you know, or anything that created a lot of dust. You had a window open and someone was doing cutting bricks next to you or in your house, and then all kind of debris comes in. That's a good time to do it. But you know, like I'll give you an example. In my case, the last time I did it was 4 years ago. But I changed my filter on a regular basis. I didn't do any major renovations lately and so on and so forth. So that's less important to do if you maintain your house and the filter, you change it often and you don't have any major renovations. You don't need to invest in that as much.
Okay. And when you say that change the filter, because mine has like, it has like this black kind of two black foamy pieces, and then it's got like a steel inserted like on a diamond kind of shape that looks like the filter as well.
Are we talking about the furnace now? We're talking about something.
No, the air exchanger system.
So the air exchanger, I mean, what you wanna replace is the foamy filters. Like, I mean, that's pretty much what it is. It's you know, it's
and,
not
and the steel part. I can just rinse it in the dishwasher.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So those filters, I should actually change, not just clean them.
If there are anything paper, okay, anything paper, it's to be changed. Anything that is metal, you clean them, you hold them, and so on and so forth. So that's the rule, right? You can't reuse a paper filter. That's doesn't work.
And the foamy type of material, that change or clean?
When you say foamy, I really have to kind of, if you send me a picture, because each machine is made differently, so I don't want to kind of give you the, I need to have the visual coming with that, so I can tell you what to do.
Okay.
How's that, Glenn?
Yeah, I just want to say it's kind of spongy, like spongy, foamy, that kind of thing.
Again, I would need you to send me a picture. I really have to look at the model and
how they make. Okay, thank you. Hey, that's a lot of help. Thank you very much.
Glenn, have a great weekend. Thank you.
Right.
I got 90 seconds for a question for you. Start the clock. It says, hi, Walter. I have a place in Florida I use in the winter and occasionally during the year. What temperature should I leave my air conditioner at? How often should I have it cleaned and how often to change the filter? He says, this is Rob. He says the unit's 15 years old.
You see, the Florida question is the exact opposite of what we would do here. I mean, here we worry about frozen pipes and this and that, and in the summer we don't worry much about AC when we're not living in the house. But in Florida, it's very humid. It's next to the sea, so the humidity can wreak havoc into your on your apartment. I mean, what I want to, like, you don't need to set it at 21, which is your optimum temperature, but at least 23, 24. So if you know, things get to be too warm, at least you have something that's dehumidifying the apartment and kicking in. So at 23, 24, you should be in a good place.
Okay, very good. Robbie, there you go.
Whether you're handy or all thumbs, you're listening to the Home Improvement Show, CJAD 800.
514-790-0800 is the number to call whenever you want to get through to the Home Improvement Show and get some free advice from Walter Assey from Renov Co. I think there's a question here. You know what? I think this sent in this morning? I believe so. Do heated floors save electricity? Wants to know if heated indoor floors are worth it.
They do. Because they don't take much. They take 3 to 4 amps. Mm-hmm. So it's a fabulous system of heating because it's uniform. It's low voltage, so you don't get, it doesn't suck a lot of juice. And it's and because hot air rises, it actually works a lot better than any other systems. So the quick answer is it's a very good system to save energy.
All right.
And it works.
All right. Do you have them?
I do. I do.
In the master bathroom?
Any place that have literally tiles on it, I have it. Having said that, you don't need to just have it there. You can have it on all types of different flooring except for vinyl. You can have them on engineered floors. You can have them on porcelain floors, cement floors as well. Mm-hmm. And you could even have them to be like cold and hot. So if you have a system where you want, you know, like let's say in Florida, you could do the reverse, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of with the heated wires, you can have the coils, the water coils, and it kind of work in reverse.
Very good. 514-790-0800 is the number to call. We have a couple more minutes left. Another one asking for a recommendation here. Could you please provide, if possible, your recommendations for service providers when it comes to epoxy flooring?
Epoxy flooring, there's a lot of good providers. I know you've mentioned one that is that advertises on CJAD one time.
Premier Sealers.
Premier Sealers.
Seal you later. That's their line. Seal you later.
That's correct. So that's one that does good work. There's also a Multi-Pro. They do good work as well. So, I mean, there's a lot of them out there. Again, the best way to kind of find them is by geography. A lot of them kind of farm one area, and or mostly in one area. So that's their biggest market. If the guy is located in the East End, do not call him for a job in the West Island. Mm. You know, he's going to want to pay for his gas on your job, right? So,
Are you coming across people who are having... the portable electric chargers installed at their homes? Because more and more people, especially in this province, are buying electric cars.
Yes. That's one thing. But also we're looking at an increase in people trying to increase power to their panels in order to accommodate. Like if, you know, my neighbor have two Teslas, for example. That's, if it's 60 amps each charger, that's 120 amps just for their cars. So that only leaves them 80 amps for the rest of the house. So it is a thing right now to kind of look into increasing amperage into your panels because it's coming. A lot of companies have targets for 2025 to convert to complete electric. So, you know, you prepare ahead of time. Don't wait until the big rush comes, because that's what's going to happen. In essence, there's going to be this great panic. Everybody's going to call at the same time because now they can't have access to gas cars, right? And, you know, the governments are keep on coming up with new rules and regulations about the environment and what have you. It is a good time to plan ahead. It's not an easy task. It's not like an instantaneous thing by which you come and you have, you know. So there is, it's a process, right? Hydro-Quebec have to be involved and so on and so forth. There's nothing, it doesn't cost you more money like hydro-wise, because you're only going to be paying for the consumption.
Mm.
As far as, you know, don't think just because you're adding amperage to your panel that you're going to automatically pay more money. That's one thing. The other aspect is, I mean, look at everything that keeps on coming up. In a home right now, we have, I don't know, on an average 10, 15 devices that we charge. You know, and that keeps on rising, right? Beside the fact that we have the double ovens now and the cooktops and, you know, all kind of gadgets and what have you. So the 200 amps is becoming an older story to kind of look at. Oil heating is not permitted anymore. So that's going to increase the demand for people, again, asking for more power from the grid because they can't use oil to heat. So there's this whole thing that's festering that we need to kind of address and understand that there's this big wave of demand that's going to come to these issues.
Just a side note here. Did you notice the price of gas jumped to, I think I saw it at 178 this morning.
Yeah, well, where did that come from?
I don't know, because last week, I think when I was coming in, I noticed that 162. So that's a 16-cent jump in a week. Bit of a... Good morning, gentlemen. Just wondering if Walter could recommend a company to insulate attic and mold removal in the attic at the same time.
Okay, that is a bit more tricky.
Yeah,
that is a more tricky. You would need to, because insulation companies not necessarily always do that, and most of the time actually they don't. It's not part of their activity.
Mm.
To be a mold removal company, you have to be IICRC certified or Clean Trust certified. I know a lot of contractors dabble with that, but they shouldn't.
Okay.
If you don't have the certification, the training, and you don't have the environmental pollution insurance, not every contractor. As a matter of fact, most contractors don't have that because it's extremely expensive to have.
Right.
Really expensive. Like you're talking tens of thousands of dollars per year. So, you know, a lot of them say, well, I don't touch mold, I don't touch asbestos because I don't want to pay this crazy amount of money. So you have to make sure if you're a homeowner that whoever you're calling, they have that type of policy. They give you a copy of that policy. And they have certifications for mold remediation. So they have to have training as antimicrobial remediation specialists. That's the designation, because sometimes they can give you a water damage restoration designation. That's not enough.
Right.
You need antimicrobial remediation. And that's why it's very rare that you'll have the insulation slash mold removal in under one roof. But these guys work very closely with insulation companies, and they can coordinate the whole job. And that's what you really need. You need one guy to come and take out the insulation and do the decontamination, and then the other guy to come thereafter and re-insulate the attic.
Walter, if you're going to the West Island, I suggest you leave now.
Oh, believe me. You don't have to tell me that twice.
Thanks for a great hour, sir.
Thank
you. We'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely.
He's here every Saturday morning between 9 and 10 on the Home Improvement Show. It's Walter Assey from Renovco. She's here as well and ready to go. Lisa Christensen in the driver's seat for the next hour and answering all your questions about cars and whatever you're driving. All right, so keep the number handy, 514-790-0800. Jimmy, thank you so much. I'm Ken Connors. We'll talk to you again tomorrow morning, bright and early at 6 a.m.